Welcome to,
or welcome back to,
Dark Room Reviews. My name is Ginger.
And I'm Matt.
Welcome back to this horrible new year.
Woo, 2021.
Yeah. After a bit of a holiday break, which was hopefully plenty of time for you to listen and look at our Warrens episode.
Insert shameful plug here. Shameless, not shameful. Come on.
Okay. Anyway. This week's episode, we are going to look at our first official review of the Conjuring universe with, what else?
The Conjuring.
We've talked all about the Warrens and teased so long about these films, so let's just cut all the preamble and let's dive right in. Okay, well, you might be asking, who are we?
Maybe you're not. Maybe that was a whole 2020 thing.
Maybe. Or well, maybe you're new here. I don't know. Well, normally I'm an airline pilot by day and a film buff by night, but I think now I have to say that I'm a student by day and a film buff by night.
I know. You're a studying human resources professional.
Yeah.
Gonna try to give that a shot.
Go me.
Yay.
Yay. Trying to get a career again.
What's a career? I haven't heard of that.
Anyway, my love of horror movies started very, very young. Some would probably say too young. However, I always enjoyed kind of scaring the crap out of myself. It started with my favorite
movie.
So you
must have enjoyed 2020 then.
It's too real. It's like an episode of Black Mirror.
Oh, no.
I started with, you know, my all-time favorite, which is The Shining. Insert another
shameless podcast episode plug here.
Yeah. And basically, I try to watch every horror movie that I can find, and we generally do, but I don't love every horror movie that I can find, which kind of led us to starting this podcast.
And as you know, like Ginger, although I don't have a career, I don't know, was my other film career really a career? Who knows? That's a whole other podcast we can debate on.
Yeah.
But I did have a previous background in music for film and television, working on some horror series myself. And just my experience in film and TV makes it very hard for me to enjoy anything. Ginger knows this. I'm the person that's like, they did this wrong. This is wrong.
He's so hard to watch a movie with. Oh my God.
So you get to hear my thoughts on this podcast because I have so many technical issues to enjoy anything of any movie.
Yes.
Guess that means the great debate lives on. So starting with The Conjuring. Ooh, we finally got here. Almost took us a whole year.
Yeah.
So The Conjuring was released in 2013, you know, back in the days where we could go to the movie theater.
And do stuff.
And this movie was based off of the true, air quotes, events of Ed and Lorraine Warren's investigation of the Perrin family.
Mm-hmm.
This was directed by James Wan, which we have our own thoughts and opinions on him.
Mm-hmm.
Written by Chad Hayes and Carrie W. Hayes. Not sure how they're related. But this does star Lily Taylor as Carolyn Perrin, Ron Livingston as Roger Perrin, of course, Vera Farmiga as Lorraine Warren, and Patrick Wilson as Ed Warren.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, they will carry on through all of the movies being Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Yes. Now, the Perrin family did also have five girls and a couple other people that were in this movie, but that was a lot of people to mention. We'll just give you their names for character reference. The five daughters of the Perrin family are Andrea, Nancy, Christine, Cindy, and April. This movie tells the, again, true, air quote, story of a haunting that tortured the Perrin family. They moved into a farmhouse in Rhode Island in 1971 and experienced increasingly disturbing events. These events led them to contact Ed and Lorraine Warren for their help.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the story of The Conjuring. So, like all of our podcasts, let's take a walk through, tell you what we think, what we don't like, and we're going to kind of give you a bit of the storyline along the way.
Yeah.
Again, if you haven't listened to our podcast before, keep in mind there are going to be some spoilers here. We're going to be going through the movie in depth, talking about the storyline, talking about things that worked, didn't work. You know the spiel. So let's get into it.
Yeah.
So The Conjuring Universe. So where are we? What is this? So, for those of you that aren't familiar with The Conjuring Universe, this is a collection of movies similar to Star Wars.
Yeah.
Where it is all focused around either tying in events. They're either prequel sequels or somehow related to one another.
Yep.
And the Conjuring movie, this one that we're talking about, started that whole universe. Mm-hmm. So there's a collection of movies that are out now, which are like The Conjuring 2. There's a new one coming out, The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It.
Yeah, that's the one that is supposed to be released in June of 2021. Mm-hmm. We'll see if that actually happens. But so
maybe
far,
we can go to a theater then.
Oh my God. Dream big.
For all of our friends living in southwestern Ontario.
Yeah.
The struggle's real.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're anywhere else, have fun at your restaurants.
Yeah.
We won't see those in a while.
All right.
Anyways. As well, there are other movies such as Annabelle, Annabelle Creation, Annabelle 2,
mm-hmm.
Even The Nun, La Llorona.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of movies in the universe. And so movie release date, this is the first one.
Yes.
However, looking chronologically,
yeah,
like Star Wars.
Yeah.
We're about dead in the middle.
It's the fourth, technically. So I do like to think of The Conjuring as episode 4, A New Hope.
Basically. So to give you guys an idea, that's where we are. We're starting kind of in the middle timeline-wise. And this was, at least for the Warren's career,
yep,
not their first case, not their biggest case.
No, not their first case, not their biggest case.
This is probably their most well-documented case aside from the issues in The Conjuring, not the issue, the case in The Conjuring 2.
Yeah, and also, like, Amityville Horror is really what started them. Oddly enough, Amityville Horror is not within The Conjuring universe that James Wan created.
Yes.
Which I do find that really funny, and I know that's just because someone else has rights to that story.
Yeah, and they can't get it to officially tie in.
Yeah, although it would tie in. Yeah, it's a missed
It is still something that they have worked on.
Yes, exactly.
Now, in terms of movies go, not part of this collection that James Wan has.
We can look at
assembled.
That someday too, just to Amityville Horror is interesting from a standpoint of there was the original movie, which I find pretty freaky myself. There's been a ton of sequels which were really bad over the years. And then they did a remake, and it was good up until a point, and then it got just a little cheesy for me. I almost prefer the old one, even though it was quite 70s.
Yeah.
But it was better, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The remake wasn't bad. I just, yeah, just a couple missed opportunities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should be in the universe.
Yeah.
But, so that'll also lead us into future episodes for us to try to move through this universe, give you our thoughts there.
For sure.
But now getting into the actual Conjuring the movie storyline. So let's start at the beginning. We do get a little bit of preamble with Ed and Lorraine Warren. We can see that they are starting a presentation at a university.
Yeah.
And they are basically doing a very controversial lecture talk on the supernatural. And they even show some videos of an exorcism that had taken place.
Fear is defined as a feeling of agitation and anxiety caused by the presence or imminence of danger. Now, whether it's a ghost, a spirit, or an entity, they all feed on it. Take Maurice here. He's a French-Canadian farmer, had nothing more than a third-grade education, yet after he was possessed, spoke some of the best Latin I'd ever heard, sometimes backwards.
He'd been molested by his father, who had also tortured him repeatedly.
A dark spirit made its home in this man.
Now, if you look into his eyes, you can see him tearing blood. And like that, an upside-down cross started to appear from within his body.
Yes. Now, we won't tell you exactly how this ties in, but oddly enough, this, like, two-minute clip ties in eventually with The Nun.
Yeah.
That's, like, a big thing. And you don't realize that The Nun is about to tie in with this particular
clip until basically the
very last scene.
So it's really cool how they kind of take these little scenes that you think mean nothing, but they have some overlap.
And like, we don't really like The Nun. Like, I would say The Nun is probably
one
the
of the
weakest,
weaker
in the whole series. However, I love the tie-in. The tie-in is really cool because the clip that they're showing at the very opening of the Conjuring movie is a remake of a real video that exists, by the way. I have watched the real video. It's very creepy. And it's of a French-Canadian man who's having an exorcism performed on him.
And
I believe
though
it's in the late 1960s, early 1970s. So it's Not that long ago.
No. So that's the first thing that we get. And then we get a bit of a preamble, again, that we've discussed of who the Warrens were.
Mm-hmm.
They give you an idea of who they were and what they did and kind of how controversial they were.
Yeah.
And then we get launched right into the Perrin family.
Yeah.
So the Perrins are moving into their new home.
Yeah. Which, again, big, beautiful farmhouse in Rhode Island.
I mean, aside from the hauntings, I'm sure it'd be pretty.
Oh, yeah.
Great also, house. What is it with New England having to be always super crazy haunted?
Of course.
Always New England.
Well, I always feel it's that thing of, like, wherever you have super old ties to things, you're always going to have those superstitions kind of, like, embedded in that area.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Newer cities tend to have less of those.
Yeah.
Right? They'll have like one or two, but like New England's old.
Yeah.
I mean, old for North America.
Yeah.
Right?
It's
not
true.
Not old for Europe.
No, no.
Europe's like,
try me. Try me, bitch. So we're introduced to the family. There's, again, a ton of daughters. There's five of them.
Yeah, five
They're
kids.
All bringing things in. They're doing the typical sibling thing of who's getting what room and everything, and everyone's kind of exploring the house.
It's cute. So I will say, like, as an overview of, like, the story in general, I like the acting. I think it's really well done, like,
music's
even by the
good
kids.
For the time. Like, I know they used a couple, current, like, current for the time
songs.
And even the score that they did have so far, I'm not mad at. That my opinion does change a little bit on the score.
Yeah.
That's a bit later. We'll get into that.
There's some very loud parts of the score that I don't love.
Yes. That's my critique on the score.
Yep.
Especially in the haunting parts. I find that's the main
draft. They're so loud. Yeah.
They're loud. And we start to see the family. Like, they do a great job of setting the environment. Like, they're doing, you know, at-home games, which were common in the 70s, you know.
Yeah.
They do hide and clap, which is their game where they hide and it's kind of like Marco Polo, but in a house.
Yep.
And you get three claps, find them.
Which is a real part of the story, by the way. The Perrin family used to play
that
hide
game.
And clap. That's a real thing that they did. Which I like that they brought real things of their story into the movie.
As well, we're not even just going to do a straight-up review. We're going to also mention some things that were maybe missed or not quite the full truth as to what happened in the real haunting here. Just kind of, we have the information. We would like to share it with you.
Yep.
It will affect our review slightly, but
we
already have kind of made up our minds on our reviews here.
Yeah.
So the first thing that happens is April, the youngest daughter, decides to explore outside with their dog. I believe the dog's name is Lucy.
Yeah, I think so.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And she goes to this tree by like a little lake that's by their farmhouse.
Yeah.
And it's a very picturesque place. I can see where they bought it.
Yep.
And April happens to stumble upon an old toy.
Yeah.
Which is a really creepy music box with a mirror that lifts up and it has a bit of a spiral.
Mm-hmm.
This becomes important because she will meet her first friend of the house called Rory.
Yes.
We'll get into Rory, don't worry.
Yeah.
And the first major thing that happens is as the family's settling in, in the evening, they're trying to get everyone to go to bed, and their dog's refusing to come into the house.
Yep. Stays outside.
Stays outside. The next morning, they're making breakfast, and you hear some odd concerns.
Yep.
The kids are waking up, and they're concerned about, like, it's always freezing.
Yep.
The furnace wasn't working.
Yep.
It didn't work that night, and it smelled terribly.
Yeah, it smelled like rotting flesh and
and like rotten eggs.
Yeah,
and
it just smelled horrible, they said.
And you can see Carolyn's clued in that all of the clocks in the house have stopped. I don't remember the specific time, but it was between 3 and 4 a.m.
Yeah.
It was essentially like 3:13 or 3:20 something.
Yeah.
All the clocks stopped at the same time. And she thought that was a little bizarre.
Yeah.
One of the kids goes outside to check on the dog and finds the dog has been killed.
Yeah.
Like strangled.
Yeah.
Badly.
So the dog dies on night one.
And again, the Perrin family chalks this up to the dog is outside, could have been a coyote, could have been an outdoor animal, could have been something that...
They're in a pretty rural area. I like that they, in the movie, they don't jump to the conclusion of immediately, it's haunted, or there's something wrong. Like, your dog is outside, they can get attacked by wild animals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so now the next day, after this has happened, the kids are playing hide and clap again.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the kids, about being discovered, was hiding in a closet underneath the stairs.
Yes.
So we think is a closet.
Yes.
Upon getting captured, they freak out and bump into the wall and knock over some wood panels.
Yeah.
And you find out that this house that they thought was just a regular two-story home has a basement.
Mm-hmm.
So when their dad, Roger, comes home, he's a trucker, by the way, he pries down all the boarded up section there to see what's going on in the basement.
Yep.
Bad idea. Someone boarded that up for a reason.
Yeah.
Negative points for Roger.
Yeah.
So we get a look at the basement and it's creepy as fuck.
Yeah, it's so creepy.
Think about any haunted basement.
Yeah.
That's what you got.
Yeah.
It's unfinished. It's a dug hole that has pillars in it.
Yeah, and it's filled with cobwebs and spiders, too.
Do you like spiders?
I do not.
For those of you that don't know, Ginger has a terrible fear of spiders.
Yes. If I discovered a basement like that, I would just board it up again.
Not for the ghosts, just for the spiders.
Yeah, just for the spiders. I didn't really care about the ghosts. I just for the spiders. I'd be like, you know what? Maybe that's why the old people boarded it up. There is a part of me that would, like,
legitimately think that.
My mind would go there and be like, yeah, maybe that's why.
I don't know, because I feel like, wouldn't they just get through the floorboards?
Maybe. But I'm also the person that I would be paying for, like,
extermination services.
And I'd
have.
Yes, I have.
In our Toronto apartment.
In our current Toronto apartment. Again, for those that don't know, our current Toronto apartment is not, it's actually not a high-rise. It's not a new build. We actually do have an older building. We have the main level of a, basically what you'd call like a century home, right? It was built in the around 1910, so it's over 100 years old. The structure was, and it was a single home at one point.
That got converted into basically a sixplex.
Yeah, well, at first it was a fourplex in the 1950s, and then I believe in the 1970s or 80s they converted the downstairs, which was a giant garage, place to park literally to either a stable or a garage, which is hilarious because that's the time. And then those also got turned into flats as well. So each apartment, each unit in here is actually, like, quite unique because of it. Like,
but all we're saying here is that we're on a ground floor of a home,
basically.
So we occasionally get spiders.
Yeah, I mean, you're always going to get the typical thing of, like, in the springtime and in the fall, you know, we will see, like, we have what we call, like, ceiling dwellers. They love to,
but even those are bad enough. They just hang out there and you're like, nah, can't do it.
No, I gotta get rid of them. I'm not gonna just let them stay there.
Yeah, you can't get rid of them.
No, I can't get rid of them. You have to get rid of them.
Even Steph got rid of them for you one time. She'll know what we're talking about.
Yeah, she will.
Anyways, needless to say, spiders are bad.
Yeah,
bad for Ginger.
I would board up that basement in, like,
although,
3 seconds.
I think the parents would rather take the spiders at this point as opposed to their ghosts that they had. Continuing. Now, this is where stuff starts to kind of creep in slowly. So now, the one thing I do like about this movie is the pacing.
Yeah.
I find they give you enough normal storyline.
Yeah.
As well as giving you enough haunting, so that way you stay interested in the actual story. And I think the benefit to doing a true story like this is that you actually legitimately have a timeline to go off of and a real story to match.
Yeah, you do have not a fully fictitious storyline that somebody's just making up.
I find that's the problem with some other films is that I'll say, for example, Insidious, because I don't think we reviewed it yet, but
no, and I like the first Insidious. I don't like the sequels. Yeah. I actually don't mind Insidious, but what I don't like about it is how bam, you're into it and you're haunted.
Yeah,
right
it's
away.
Like nothing
boom.
To nothing. Boom, you're haunted and all this crazy stuff is happening.
Yeah, like really crazy. Like you see really crazy shit in Insidious like early.
Within like the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Whereas this one is like, you know it is going to be a haunting story. They give you the preamble of the Warrens. Now you're meeting the family and you're doing all these normal things that a family would do. And just normal kind of normal, I would say like normal slash abnormal things have happened. Like things that you know. And I think this also ties into what we think is horrifying, is that, like, we know it's a haunting.
Yes.
The family doesn't know yet in the story.
Yeah.
Because, like, we know that they're just random oddities that are probably leading to a haunting, but they don't know that yet.
Yeah, and that's what makes it so good.
And, again, because this was based on quote, true events. There was a real timeline of events that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm even sure the family looking back on it now is like, oh yeah, remember when all the clocks stopped?
Mm-hmm.
Should have looked into that then. So some of the things that start happening now is the next morning after they had moved in, Carolyn has some bruises all over, not all over, but on her arms and her legs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of funny. They make a joke in the movie being like, they are like, oh, let's christen the new house.
Yeah.
And they have sex in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And she wakes up with the bruises and she's like, what the fuck did you do to me?
Yeah. It's really cute how they like play it off because she's like, oh man, you gotta, don't be so rough.
Yeah.
It's cute.
It's funny. And now the kids are starting to experience some things. So one thing that you get to kind of see right away is Christine, I believe, the second youngest daughter,
mm-hmm.
Starts sleepwalking.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the big thing, is that she starts sleepwalking again, which hasn't happened in a while. Some bad smells start coming in. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, there's this weird, creepy closet that's in one of the rooms. And in that room,
mm-hmm.
that's where Christine sleepwalks too.
Yep.
And that's where the kids start experiencing some interesting things by seeing things. They also have some nights of blankets being pulled off of them, being dragged in their bed.
Leg tugging, mm-hmm. like somebody is pulling at their legs.
Stop it, Nancy. It's not funny anymore. I'm trying to sleep. Please stop grabbing my feet.
And the kids brush it off as thinking it's just one of their sisters.
Yeah.
That's also like a clever...
As someone who has three other brothers, siblings do that shit to you.
Yeah. So it's not bad how they're building it up. You as the audience member, you are freaked out for them because you know some shit's about to go down. But also they're not giving you everything.
Yeah, and I think a couple of the kids have a meltdown, like that happens and they cry and they're like, you know, the parents do the typical thing, like, oh, you know, it was a bad dream.
Yeah.
It's okay.
It's good.
So that's kind of where we're going. So now things are kind of ramped up another notch.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, the clocks keep stopping around 3 a.m.
Yep.
Oddly enough, we'll do a quick segue here. I know when the Warrens do come in, they do mention this in the movie as well, but we'll go a little bit more in depth for you guys.
Right.
There's actually a cool thing that you probably heard of called the witching hour.
Right. So, this is something that is in folklore. So, either referred to as the witching hour or the devil's hour. Essentially, what it is, it can be dated back to pre-Christianity, although the type that they are talking about, or the Warrens are talking about, is basically Western Christianity. This would be a time that the real world, the natural world, and the supernatural, there's an extremely thin veil between the two of them. This would have been when, in folklore, if you were a witch, this would have been the time to practice your witchcraft.
Yep, and black magic had the most effect at that time.
Yeah, and this is also the time where you could potentially expect to make contact with ghosts, with spirits, with demons even.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that there's some dispute between the time is that the 3 a.m. time comes from an insult to the Holy Trinity.
And that's the Western Christianity look
yes.
on it, is that everything comes in threes to mock or insult the Holy Trinity.
God, basically.
Yeah.
However, we did look up that there was a research paper that was done, that credible, it was done by Oxford University,
yeah.
and they had actually been able to date this folklore, or this tale, predating Christianity in old Europe, and they used to think that the witching hour was between like midnight and 1 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And same ideas, though. Really, it was, you know,
the same idea. Instead of a mocking Holy Trinity direct Christianity reference, it was just the time that they believed was the most effective for this supernatural
occurrences.
Length. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in Western society, in terms of that, it's between where the witching hour or the most severe supernatural demonic things will occur between 3 and 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And but the original folklore is supposed to be midnight to 1 a.m.
Just some cool...
Just don't be awake at night.
Yeah.
And you'll be good.
Right.
Don't worry
you're
about
good.
It. So that aside, that gets brought up in the movie, but they only ever mention the 3 a.m. Western Christianity
yeah.
section.
Yeah.
We'll let you know when that comes up in the storyline here. So now we get to learn that some more stuff is going on. There's a bit of tension between Carolyn and Roger. And of course, this is the worst time, but Roger is a long-haul trucker and gets called for a week turnaround for a Florida turn, essentially.
Yeah.
Remember when we used to do Florida turns?
Yeah.
That was fun.
That was fun.
Good times. So, of course, he leaves and shit hits the fan.
Yep.
Things get ramped up.
Mm-hmm.
Sleepwalking starts up again and again to the same closet. And April and Carolyn, this is a separate day. Now the kids are in school and Carolyn's kind of taking care of April by herself. They decide to play hide and clap after April decides to show her mom her friend Rory. Remember Rory?
Yeah.
He's back already.
He's back.
So in a few earlier scenes, we've seen April kind of talking to herself in her room.
Yep.
She's kind of with the music box, and you're like, uh-oh, this ain't good.
Yeah. Playing with the music box alone, talking with herself.
No. Yeah. So now Carolyn comes in and is like, oh, who are you talking to? And she's like, oh, I was talking to Rory.
Yeah.
And she's like, who's Rory?
Yeah.
And April's essentially like, oh, you need to use this music box in order to see him, and he'll appear behind you in the mirror. Not a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
And so Carolyn does that, and you can see she's already kind of exhausted because she's being, like, tortured and possessed.
Yeah.
As you do when you get moved into a new house.
You know.
moving. Yeah. Now, this is a scene where I like and hate the music. So my downfall with this point onward with the music is they kind of allude you too much to the horror things, the haunting things.
Yep.
And I find it gets so loud that the only reason that it ends up being scary is because it's a jump scare.
Yes.
And I don't care for soundtracks that are like that for the entirety of the movie. Now, in this instance, I do like it. Like, I think it works for this scene because it's a fake out. So at this point, she does the whole music box thing, waits, and then April goes, boo!
Yeah.
And scares the mother.
And scares the mom.
So I don't mind it in this case, but I find, unfortunately, that's kind of how all the ramp-ups go.
Yeah.
Is that it ends up being a, you know, too much of a hitting it on the nose type of score. And it's just loud. I find they get so many effects in there. It's more of an effect score.
Yeah.
There are some places where they do have some nice melodies, and those parts are really nice. But for most of the horror stuff, it's a louder synthy electronic soundscape score.
Yeah.
So now April is wanting to play hide and clap. You know, scared the shit out of her mom.
Yeah.
Let's play a creepy game where you're blindfolded and can't see.
In a brand new house that you don't know.
Yes. So they start getting blindfolded, and here we go. We're playing hide and clap.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, April's went one way, but Carolyn's hearing sounds a different direction.
Yes. Carolyn ends up following claps, leading her to this wardrobe that we keep telling you guys about. And she thinks that she's narrowing in on her little girl, April, but really she's not. And you actually get to see the creepy hands
come out of the closet
and clap
and then go back in.
Yeah. It's well done. So she's just about to, she still kind of like has her blindfold on. She's just kind of in the process of taking it off. And April kind of busts in, and she's like, ha-ha, Mom.
You took your blindfold off. I win. You weren't even warm, Mom. I was in Christine and Nancy's room.
Like, you were way off.
You were way off. You were nowhere near. And she's like, what the hell? Like, you can tell that she is
creeped out.
Creeped out in that moment because she thought for sure that her kid was in that, like, wardrobe closet.
Yeah.
So, pretty well done. I like the scene. Like, it definitely, you know, builds suspense very well.
Mm-hmm. Especially leading into the next scene, which is, you know, all hell breaks loose.
Yes.
So now, I don't know specifically timeline if this is the same night or a different night, but essentially, this night, all the kids are asleep, and Carolyn is just kind of exhausted with everything, you know, haunting and shit. And it's middle of the night, and she's hearing people playing hide and clap when the kids are supposed to be asleep.
Yeah,
and I also think one of the pictures fell off the wall, too.
Yeah, I think some pictures fell off the wall or glass broke or something from it.
Yeah.
Again, the clocks are stopped.
So she goes downstairs to check it all out, thinking that something's going on, and she hears the hide and clap going on. And, of course, it's not the kids. It's the other kid.
It's Rory.
Yeah. So now we're on the main level, and we can see that there are hands coming out of the closet to the basement. The closet door, the old closet door that now leads to the basement.
Yep.
And meanwhile, while this is going on, the kids are upstairs experiencing weird things.
Yes.
More sleepwalking is happening, and one of the daughters, I believe it is Nancy.
Yes.
Is staring on top of the closet because she's seeing something. She sees someone on top of the closet.
Yeah.
As this is happening, though, Carolyn, the mother, gets lured into the basement.
Yeah.
And trying to find out what's going on with the hide and clap situation.
Who's ever down there? I'm gonna lock you in now!
And subsequently gets trapped down there.
She gets tripped down the stairs in the dark with basically only matches.
Yep.
And that's the creepy trailer scene that everyone gets where she has the match lit. Yeah. And she hears like the two claps coming in.
Yep.
And her match gets blown out.
Yeah.
Hey, wanna play hide and clap?
Everyone's screaming.
Yeah.
Everyone's terrified.
Yep.
And who happens to come home from work?
Roger.
Happy way.
Yeah.
Happy way to come home to work.
Right. So Roger walks in basically to like all hell breaking loose in the house. He helps Carolyn kind of freeze her from the basement. They run upstairs and then you get a glimpse finally of what the girls were seeing on top of the wardrobe.
Yeah, it was basically a creepy old lady that was hunched over and about to jump down.
Kind of like pounces down on them. And yeah, that's kind of your first full-on view of who this, like, you know, you don't even know that it's a, well, no, you don't even know that it's a witch yet. You don't know it yet.
Not yet.
Yeah.
So the kind of interesting thing here is that they kind of took a little bit of liberties with these scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So these scenes, they kind of describe it as more premeditated and like trapping the kids up there with, you know, this figure.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, the hide and clap games, as true as they are, were not as planned out as this, but they were as malicious.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, apparently, according to the family's reports, they were worse.
Yeah.
They were more insidious in nature, and like people would get locked in places more frequently than you would expect.
Yeah, way more potential, like kids getting hurt and stuff during the games. Like
it wasn't just like one bad night. Apparently, this was like a repeated amount of times.
Yeah.
So that's kind of creepy.
Oddly enough, apparently the movie downplays how bad the hide and clap game
got, and apparently it went on for months.
Yeah.
Of this kind of rampant in the middle of the night. Stuff like this going on.
Yeah, it's bad.
An interesting thing to look if you're interested in kind of more I'll put facts in quotation here.
Yeah.
Of what had happened on that is the actual Haunting TV series.
Yes.
That did do a straight up documentary on this, mm-hmm. which is actually pretty interesting if you're interested in looking at that from that point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But in the scene, I think they all did great acting. I mm-hmm. think all the sound effects and the scores were good.
Yeah.
Again, just not my favorite type of score.
Yeah.
But just loud.
Yeah,
but
you know.
I think it worked for the scene.
Yep.
And now, finally some real sensible things happening. Carolyn goes to seek out the Warrens.
Yeah.
Now again, a bit of an aside. This didn't originally happen in the story that took place. The parents actually never went to look for the Warrens.
No.
It was a neighbor or a friend.
It's a friend.
That's what it was.
It's a family friend who, basically the parents, because they had been dealing with this for months and months on end, they, you know, ended up telling close family members, certain close friends about what they were experiencing in the house. And it was a close family friend who had heard about the Warrens and who actually talked to Ed and Lorraine.
And basically the friend had set it up for them.
Yeah.
Carolyn never actually set it up. So in the movie, Carolyn actually goes to one of their lectures.
Yeah.
And basically tries to confront them after things have happened,
mm-hmm.
and goes over and is like, look, we need your help. Even if you can come by for like 10 minutes, I might be crazy, but can you come by? And originally Ed is like hesitant, but Lorraine can tell that something's off.
Yeah. Now, the reason that Ed is more hesitant is that he's still kind of freaked out by what happened on that exorcism.
So on the exorcism, we now learn a bit about Ed and Lorraine Warren in this part of the movie. Is now they're driving. Mm-hmm. The Warrens are driving to the parents' household to check it out, and Ed expresses some concerns.
Yeah.
Essentially, we find out that during the exorcism, that is actually the same one that was in the movie that they're showing during their lectures.
Yeah.
This with this French-Canadian guy. There is an image of Lorraine,
mm-hmm.
where essentially the person getting exorcised holds on to her and she sees something.
Yes.
Some terrible vision, something.
Yeah. Yep.
And essentially Ed says that he's worried for her because every time they do things like this, it slowly takes a piece away from her.
Yeah.
Because she's living with all these mental images of things that she can't unsee.
It eats at her over the years, right? Mm-hmm. It makes sense.
So he's very hesitant to try to take on new and especially very severe projects.
Mm-hmm.
So, understandably so.
But she's more gung-ho. She's like, no, this is what we were meant to do. They've both said it over and over that they're very religious. So they had said, like, this is why God brought them together, to help people.
Yeah.
So you're like, okay.
So now we get to the Warren, or not to the Warrens, to the parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
And they do just a normal walkthrough.
Yeah.
We find out this is the part where we learn about the Holy Trinity. They've been experiencing, like, knockings and threes.
Yep.
All the clocks stopping. Basically, everything that we have already known is summed up in to the Warrens at this point.
Yeah.
As well, the new thing that's happened is the family now all sleeps together in the living room.
They just feel safer.
They feel safer together than in their own rooms.
Yeah.
That is actually true.
Yeah, yeah.
They did actually do that in the original story. They all slept, like, on the main level of the home for months.
Yeah.
Until they came by.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And they never had pictures up because they kept getting knocked down.
That is, like, a true part of the story.
Yeah. So now we get Lorraine's experience, and this is where we get the creepy shot, which is actually the poster for the movie. So Lorraine goes outside to kind of look around, and you see that there is Ed comes by, and in the background above Lorraine's shoulder is a dangling foot.
Yes, because basically somebody is hanging from the tree limb right behind
her. In the yard.
Yep.
And in addition, Lorraine tries to examine the music box that Rory's part of the music box, but April gives to Lorraine.
Yeah.
And she's trying to see some things in there.
Yeah.
And she does.
Yep.
Which she does. And Lorraine basically is concerned because she has seen what she calls a darkness.
Yes.
Over the family.
Attached to the family, which I think was her exact words. Yeah.
And they do a good job in the movie. I do like this, how they try to visualize it. Because not being a medium, I wouldn't know what that is like, whether or not you believe in mediums or not.
Yep.
But I think they do a good job of trying to visualize that without giving too much away.
Yeah. So during the first walkthrough, you're not really seeing
seeing it through, quote, Lorraine's eyes.
No, you're seeing things through our eyes, which is you don't really see anything.
Yeah.
And then later, she kind of has flashbacks.
She retells what her impressions were when she walked in.
And you're let in on what Lorraine sees.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really cool way to show it on film.
Yeah. They basically did like almost like a black, grayish blob around the family. Not anything descript.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that you see that is concrete is the woman hanging from the tree.
Yeah.
So now to kind of get some information, they are going to continue with a further investigation.
Yeah.
They end up taking an audio interview just to kind of get some information. They ask general questions like, can you start from the beginning, mm-hmm. from the first occurrence?
Yeah.
What has happened? Yeah. And they ask all these like general questions.
Yeah.
So now the Warrens leave to kind of do some more research on the home.
Yep.
And again, we've already talked about this with the Warrens, but this is something that I personally do like about them. Again, so for those people that love or hate them, you're kind of on one side. But I do at least appreciate that they did do research on these people. They went into documents, they went into archives, and they tried to put concrete things together, or at least try to make it seem concrete.
Yeah.
Again, maybe that was the biggest con that they were great at.
Yeah.
Maybe they were just really good at what they did.
Yep.
We'll never know.
Right.
But during this time, with this case in particular, they did go back and analyze the interview and did some digging into the actual records of the home. Mm-hmm. And did they find anything interesting?
Yes, they did.
Shocking.
Shocking. We're not shocked.
No.
So the two really interesting things that they find from the investigation, I would say the latest one is that during the recording of the interview with the parents, Carolyn's voice doesn't show up in the recording at all. Literally almost as if, like, she's literally not there.
Yep.
And there's nothing else there. It's just dead silence when she's supposed to be talking.
And later in the tape, there is a spirit, quote, voice.
Yes.
That is on the tape. And they've also shown it in the movie. Now, I don't know if this is true or not, but in the movie, they deem it as, like, they stop the recording and it starts and stops by itself.
Right. Yeah.
Don't know how true that is. Mm-hmm. But I do know they did have weird sounds on the original recording, mm-hmm. and people's voices were cut out.
Yeah, it's really cool.
They also found out about their house some interesting things.
Yes. So the really big piece of information that they find out is that essentially the house was owned by a witch. The witch's name is Bathsheba. Now, what's really interesting about this is that this is a real legend.
Yeah.
Yeah. The legend of Bathsheba is that she was a witch, dedicated her life to Satan, and actually killed her children and gave them as, you know, like, what do you call it? Sacrifices. Yeah. Yeah, to devote her life properly to Satan. And that's where she lived. So what the Warrens end up thinking is that this Bathsheba is cursing anyone or possessing anyone who dares to, like, live on that land and live in her house.
And as punishment, they're going to have the same sacrifices that she made. Essentially,
the mother
are going to kill their kids.
Yeah.
In the end, Bathsheba also hangs herself, which is related to the figure that Lorraine sees.
Yeah.
They also found out that there are some interesting correlations, that there were, I think, two families.
Yes.
Before, or at least one. I don't know if they mentioned two, but I know Rory.
Mm-hmm.
There was a family, and that was Rory, who the mother had
killed Rory, and then killed herself.
Yep. So that's kind of the weird tie-in there. So after all this, the Warrens return to the home and basically they're like, we need to conduct a proper investigation, and we need to fix this fast.
Yeah.
So they start putting up crosses. They do, like, a full cleansing of the home, and they set up actual investigative equipment.
Yep.
So they set up, you know, regular cameras. Standard,
yeah.
They have video cameras, which, you know, cutting edge of the 70s.
Yeah.
And they had some other audio. They had recording devices. They also had temperature sensing photography. So they would have things hooked up to sensors. Like, very, you know, kind of cutting edge things for the time.
Yeah.
And their whole thing was to try to document everything. And as you know, what we said before, the Warrens, that was their whole shtick.
Yeah.
They didn't want to go out there and just tell people to believe in it. They wanted to show it, prove it.
Have documentation.
And have documentation that this is real.
It's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. And they also mentioned that there was two things. They needed to cleanse it, and they also wanted to, you know, stir up some action to try to get some stuff caught on film.
Yeah. Now, the first night that they're there, it ends up being pretty calm.
It's fairly calm until things start to get a little crazy. So there's a few sleepwalking. That's what kind of kicks this whole night off.
Yep.
There's, like, nothing, and then the clock stops, and then sleepwalking happens. During the sleepwalking, all the cameras get triggered while she's walking. And those are some, what they base those scenes off of, and those actual photos that they show later, those are based off of the real photos that were taken during that investigation.
Yeah.
Same thing with the later on, we'll tell you about that. And they go upstairs into the closet.
Mm-hmm.
And then they all kind of come back downstairs, and the door to the basement starts to slam shut.
Yes.
Lastly, one of the daughter's hair gets pulled, and she's dragged across the floor by her hair.
That's a good scene.
It's a good scene.
What do you think about that one, like, effects-wise?
Effects-wise, they did a really good job on that.
Yeah, I don't think it's too cheesy.
It's not too cheesy. Soundtrack isn't overbearing at this point. Yeah. I think it's because the whole thing's scary enough.
She visits Carolyn every night. That's what the bruise marks are. She's feeding off of her.
Nancy?
Yeah.
It doesn't need super, super loud synthy sounds or score. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And somewhere in the mix here, one of the kids is lost upstairs. There's photos going crazy.
Yeah.
Lorraine happens to fall into the basement through the back of the closet. I think one of the daughters gets lost in the closet. There's actually
two
floors and into the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you get your first kind of creepy haunting scene.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, all this crap's going on and Lorraine is now stuck in the basement and Ed's trying to find her.
Yep.
And we get to see visions of Rory's mother and Rory.
Yes.
And unfortunately...
The mother, Rory's mother, explains...
Basically, she's that muttering Bathsheba, on. Like, she made me do this.
Yeah.
Exactly. She made me do this.
Yeah.
And good jump scares during that, which I like. The thing to note here is that Lorraine loses her necklace.
Yes.
During this scene.
Yep.
And thankfully, they caught all this on film while it was happening, and they're like, holy shit, this is bad. Yeah. We need to exercise, like, the home and everyone in it.
The home, the family, everything.
And, but, unfortunately, for those of you that are not up on your exorcism laws, you can't do that just out of the will, like, willy-nilly anymore.
Yeah.
You have to get permission. Yeah. And there's only one place in the world, still, to this date, that can give you permission for exorcisms.
And that's
the Vatican.
And they never approve it. They almost never approve it.
Especially now, I can't even tell you when the last approved exorcism was.
Yeah.
So they take this to their local church, and the priest there is like, shit, that's bad. And so they try to rush it off to the Vatican to get it approved.
Yeah.
But again, it's a waiting game. It's bureaucratic. So...
And I think part of his hesitation is that the family is not christened.
Yeah, they don't think they're baptized.
Yeah.
And they weren't members of the church.
Right. And I think that's part of it, is that he knows that essentially the Vatican will deny the request for an exorcism based on that alone. And the reason that they deny those things is for good reason. Because up until modern science started kicking in, you know, exorcisms were more frequent, unfortunately, because people didn't understand mental illness.
Yeah, they didn't understand mental illness. They didn't understand certain medical conditions either.
Yeah.
So it was a tough line to kind of decide what was mental health, what was this, what was that. And that was kind of everyone's, like, default was, you need something fixed. It's not something we know about.
Yep.
God has to be a spirit. Has to be the devil.
Exactly.
So during this time, however, because Lorraine has left her necklace in the basement, she kind of leaves without it, that has created now a link to her daughter back at home, and shit starts going on at the Warren's home as well.
Yes.
So that's kind of a cool tie-in. I don't remember if that happened in the original story, in the original recount of this, but it's a nice movie tie-in nonetheless.
Yep.
Now we kind of have a quick scene aside with Judy the daughter is hearing things and is getting lured away. And
she has a weird encounter with the...
Yeah, with the Bathsheba herself too in the home.
Yeah.
And Lorraine is like, oh shit, something's happening.
Yes.
And she calls and everything's kind of okay. They figured everything out.
Yeah.
And they decide that things are getting... Like, they should stay in town because she feels that things are going to get worse.
Yeah.
Rightfully so, the parents at this point have now moved out of the home and are at a motel.
Yeah.
Even though the Warrens have basically said it won't do anything. Matter.
Yeah.
Which, shocking, it doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't.
It didn't do anything.
So at this point, you get to see Carolyn's, like, full possessed moment.
Well, sorry, quick aside. Before she gets possessed, before the Warrens leave in the morning of that crazy videotaping night, there is a cool scene with the storm coming in.
Yeah, yeah.
Where Lorraine is helping, you know, the family get ready and folding laundry.
Yeah.
And one of the sheets flies off and it gets stuck on a person's figure.
Yeah.
And then goes up into the window, and that's where you see Bathsheba.
Yeah.
And
it's a cool scene.
Yeah. And Lorraine knows something is going wrong. So she rushes in to try to take care of Carolyn before something bad happens to her.
But meanwhile, Carolyn had been laying down to take a nap just because she's so tired, so exhausted, you know, doesn't feel well. And Bathsheba basically possesses her by, I still don't know what that is. She like barfs weird into her mouth.
Blood vomits
into her mouth. I don't like that.
I think that's too Hollywood gimmicky.
Yeah, it's so gimmicky.
Like, I find that that's just kind of a, you had so many options.
I think less is more always.
Yeah.
So the way that I would have wanted to signify that Carolyn is possessed is through her personality alone.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have even wanted to see it. I don't want a depiction of it.
Yeah.
Right? Because anything that they show you is just going to take all the scares out of it.
Yeah. And that's kind of what it did. The only thing that it gave them was a bit of a tool at the end to signal when she wasn't possessed.
Yeah, but I would have almost preferred to just see that on its own.
But I also think they did such a good job with makeup and like, different contacts and different like eye shapes, like even especially in the possessed scenes, you can really tell that like that's not Carolyn.
That's not Carolyn, it's somebody else, she's possessed.
So you get this whole scene where Carolyn is woken up in her bed with Bathsheba on top of her, basically like
blood vomiting into her mouth
which I'm like, that would taste delicious.
And
she gets out of bed and runs into Lorraine, and Lorraine's like, are you okay? Has anything happened? And she's,
and she's like, no, I'm just not feeling well.
Meanwhile, you know, she's super hella possessed.
She's possessed.
She's not Carolyn anymore.
She's gone.
So then, again, this is where the whole link to the Warrens family happens, and now they're at the motel.
Yeah.
So at the motel, though, it doesn't stop Carolyn, now possessed spirit, to take the kids back to the home to attempt to kill them. Which
so,
you do.
So she ends up taking two daughters back to the house with her.
Yeah. She takes Christine and April.
Yeah, the youngest ones.
Yeah. And essentially, Roger, the husband, was out during this time to get groceries or something or meet up somewhere.
Yep.
And by the time he comes back, the kids are all at the door basically being like, Mom left.
And she was acting really weird.
And she's acting really weird. And took two kids with her.
Yeah. And left us here. And...
yeah. So Roger calls the Warrens and is like, she's going to the house.
Yeah.
We'll meet you there.
Yeah.
So now this is where, now, unfortunately, this part forward, although there is some elements of truth to the storyline,
this is
where it gets Hollywood.
Yeah.
So there's a couple things that happen here from this point forward. Essentially, April runs off and Christine, the younger one, is found pretty early on in the house by one of the cops or one of the investigator assistants that helped them. I can't remember which one.
Yeah.
Either way, she's pretty much saved right away, and she spends the rest of the night in the cop car.
Yeah, yeah.
Outside. And then April is chased around still by the mother that's now possessed.
Yes.
They look all over. They look in the kitchen. They look everywhere. Mm-hmm. And essentially, Lorraine, Ed, and the police officer and the investigation assistant guy.
Yep.
They catch her and essentially are like, okay, we need to take her out of the house.
Yes.
They find out that she can't be taken out of the house because she'll burst into flames or be killed somehow.
Yeah.
That's a little Hollywood for me.
Right? I don't like that one.
Don't care for that one.
So they hide her.
So they hide her in the basement and they're basically like, we need to keep her here until then. But they're kind of now in this moral dilemma of, do they do the exorcism because that's what she needs right now?
Yeah.
Or do they do nothing and wait for the Vatican approval?
Yeah.
Being the Hollywood movie they are, they go for the exorcism.
Yeah.
Which, I can't remember if that actually happened or not.
No.
No, because they never had anything happen. They just left, right?
Yeah, they didn't... Okay, so here's what really happens. In the true story, when the Warrens come, the situation gets much worse.
Yeah.
So the hauntings get really, really crazy, really intense.
Yeah.
And the Perrin family doesn't like that.
They don't like it, and they actually kick the Warrens out. They don't even do anything else.
Yeah. They decide that it's the Warrens' fault, and it's going to get better when they leave. Well, it didn't. It just ends up getting worse and worse and worse, and they had to wait how long?
I think they owned the house for 10 years before they sold it, and then they were fine.
Yeah.
But they basically just put up with it.
They basically just dealt with it in some form or another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember there wasn't an exorcism in that case.
No.
So, all of this now onwards...
it's totally not true.
Totally not true.
Yeah.
Didn't happen.
Yeah. Just for the purposes of Hollywood and a good movie.
It makes a really good, nicely wrapped up story, haunting story.
Yeah.
But not exactly true to what had happened.
Yeah.
So now at this point, April is hiding somewhere in the house.
Yes.
Carolyn's tied up in a chair in the basement.
Yep.
And they start to conduct an exorcism on Carolyn.
Yes.
To save her soul.
Yes.
This is all Hollywood. I mean, they do a really good job, but again, this is where they have less is more.
Good effects.
Good effects. The floating chair, the upside-down chair.
Yeah.
Carolyn's face makeup and everything. Yeah, like how they really morphed her face is really good.
I like that you don't... It's not as gory and it's not as gimmicky as the other... Even some of the other scenes.
And even some of the voice effects at this point where they're trying to, you know, meld her voice. It doesn't sound too, like, I am a demon spirit low voice. It's actually really, like... tastefully mixed.
Yeah, I like it.
It's really good. So they do the exorcism.
It works.
That's all fun.
Yep.
They think it works, but then they hear April somewhere. Yes. Someone's like, we found April. And as soon as that happens, snaps right back into being possessed, and she goes and takes some scissors?
Scissors, yeah.
And chases April.
Yeah, that's
right. And April is hiding in between the floorboards or in the attic somewhere.
Yeah, she's in the floorboards.
In the floorboards underneath one of the floors, yeah.
Yeah.
And so the mother goes to try to chase her. And essentially, at the last moment, they're under the floorboards. And she gets April. And Lorraine, you know, talks her down from this whole thing.
Basically, Lorraine, like, pulls her back to a real moment. So that Carolyn can fight the demon from within. That's the idea.
Yeah. She, like, holds her head and is like, remember the photo you showed me of them, like, on the beach and everything.
Having a nice time and having a very, like, nice family moment.
Nice family moment. And this is the moment where Carolyn, you know, defeats the evil possession, coughs up her blood from Bastuba, and is good again.
Yeah.
By the power of God, I condemn you back to hell!
This is your daughter! You can't give in!
Roger, we need to get her to fight from the inside!
Don't let her do this to you, okay? Don't let this thing do this. You gotta fight it. I know you're stronger than she is. You gotta fight it!
Keep it going, Roger!
You gotta stay with us, all right? Come on back, Carolyn.
Lorraine, that's it! Get her back!
Remember what you showed me! Remember that day that you said you would never forget!
And that's kind of ties up the story there. The next morning,
family's all reunited.
Family's all reunited. Everything's all good. And Carolyn can now safely exit the house without being burst into flames or blistering or whatever was going to happen to her.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't recommend that. But it's a nice little tie-in there.
Yeah.
Now, my problem with the exorcism scene, music-wise, that's where it gets too loud.
It's so loud. It's, like, deafening.
And it's a long sequence.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, it's not that quick. It's...
But now the nice score at the end of the movie, though, is so, like, nice, calming, tranquil, relaxing. Like, it has a nice little, like, heartwarming sound to it. Mm-hmm. It's just so weird because, like, there are moments of this movie that I really love for soundtrack and everything. And there are others where I'm like, you hit it too on the nose and it's just too loud.
It's unfortunate because I like the length of the scene because of the imagery itself.
Yes.
I don't like when... You know, you get to an exorcism part of any of these types of movies, and it's over, like, in 2 seconds. And I'm like, what? Like,
that would have taken longer.
Yeah, like, show me some fight, you know? Like, I want to see some fight. Which almost brings me back to a time of, like, The Exorcist, right?
Yes.
That movie. I feel like they did it the best, because it was such a slow burn, right? Getting her up to that point, and then when the mother finally wants to admit that she's possessed... And then when they bring the two priests in, like, it's, like, session after session after session that they're doing. And I like that. Like, I like that you can feel the exhaustion through the length of the scene.
Yeah.
But the music, oh, my God, it doesn't suit it well. It doesn't accompany
it
well.
Now, I will say this does have better soundtrack music than Insidious.
Yeah.
Insidious is just a little too noisy.
Insidious is also, the music, I find, especially, is distracting and more gimmicky.
Yes.
Now,
the one thing I will say between James Wan's style of the actual production value of this, I do like the way he plays with colors in the scenes.
Yeah.
A lot of the haunting scenes will be very minimal colors. It'll be mostly grays.
Yeah, I like it.
I know some people don't care for that. It looks too, like, you know, haunting, stereotypical haunting thing, but I like it because, like, the colors do get superimposed in there, and especially when there are scenes with blood, and especially now because he's used the whole vomiting blood thing as a possession sign.
It looks very, very sharp when it
pops out. It's almost like that Hammer Horrors thing where it almost looks so bright. It's almost an homage to that.
Yeah, it's almost an orangey red as versus like a
blood
red. Yeah.
So that's kind of cool, especially in that basement scene. It's so dark, but like there's still color. It's not like it hasn't just gone like black and white.
From
at that
a technical point, that's
it's interesting.
Yeah.
And especially, too, in the contrast to the scenes after where it's all light. But that is kind of the nice thing when you have true horror stories that happen primarily at night.
Yeah.
It's just kind of the way it goes sometimes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and that's kind of our wrap-up of The Conjuring.
Yeah, that's
so,
it.
Overall, I think they did a really good job of telling the story. I think that they did a great job with the acting. The production value was great. I don't really have any issues with production value with the movie. Soundtrack, a little eh. And I think there are a couple just over-the-top cinematic things, but overall a very watchable movie, and especially creepy when you realize, like...
The parts that are based on the true parts of the story are really creepy. I like that. I like that so much of it was based on the true story right up until the exorcism point, and then that's
it gets
completely
a little much.
Hollywood. Yeah, and that is the too much scenes for me, too.
And honestly, that's kind of our... issues with The Nun as well, and a couple other movies in the universe, is that like they take the original story and it's great, but sometimes they just go a little too Hollywood.
Yeah.
And that's overall just kind of my, if I had to put like a little sentence on it, that's my thoughts on this movie.
Now let me ask you a question. Do you find The Conjuring scary? Maybe not now, you've seen it like a thousand times.
I've seen it a thousand times. But no, like when it first came out, I found it scary.
Same. Yeah, I actually found it genuinely pretty freaky.
Because even though you know that like some of it has been exaggerated. Again, the entire premise of it being, like, at least, like, this family existed, and at least to them, these events took place in at least some manner that was horrifying for them.
Yeah.
And the fact that now they're making a movie out of it, and there are some documented things about that, is creepy.
Yeah,
I agree. Especially, even though, it maybe aggravates a little bit because they probably blew it a little bit out of the water.
For sure.
But... again, the bare bones there, it's like, it is based off of a real family that did this investigation where things of that nature happened to that family. And I think that is just creepy.
I would agree.
And that's kind of how I feel about most of the Conjuring universe, is that I'm almost more creeped out as to how it ties in. Not necessarily the film tie-in.
No.
But the actual legitimate real-life tie-in.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's kind of the creepy thing here, is we'll go into this in subsequent episodes, but...
yeah.
Essentially, like, there are random details through all of the Warren's investigations that have kind of strange through lines. And when you actually look at them, they're not movie through lines.
No.
They're real through lines that happened.
Yep.
So, and I'm not one here to be like, oh, I 100% believe in it.
No.
But when things like that happen, you can't help but question it.
Yeah, and you can't help but at least just acknowledge the similarities.
Yeah. It's hard to ignore those types of coincidences.
Yeah, for sure.
So, it's interesting to say the least.
Yeah.
Now, to get into our score parts.
Yeah.
Woo. So, we are still going to be scoring the movie. I know we kind of did a bit of a back and forth with, you know, our own thoughts, the original story in the movie. But we are still going to review and give this a critique.
Yeah.
So, as you know, we give 20 points for each category, approximately. We're going to give you just one score out of 100. So, our 100-point score total is going to come from the following categories. The overall story, the acting, any visual effects, music and sound effects, and the movie ending and satisfaction rate.
Mm-hmm.
So, my score out of 100 is... I gave an 85.
Yeah. I also gave it an 85.
Ma'am, I need you to stop copying me.
I refuse to. Outright refuse to.
I thought I was the critic here. Maybe you should give a higher score.
Yeah, right? No, I think this is a really fair score for the movie. It's still very enjoyable. It's still really well done. I think the acting is really good at most parts. Even, okay, think of all those child actors. Normally, I am the biggest trasher on child actors.
Yes.
I really don't like them a lot of the times. I find it's very hard for me to really enjoy a child actor. Danny from The Shining is kind of one of those exceptions as well.
Yep.
But otherwise, I find, like, the kids aren't good enough. I know that's really sad to say, but, like, most child actors just aren't good enough. You can just tell that they're...
Even the girl that played April. Great job.
Great job. Like, you really get... pulled into thinking that those are their kids.
Yeah.
Like you, it's well done. We like the visual effects. We talked about the good part of that. The music to start off with is good. The sound effects, not so much. That is where I start to have to ding it down a little bit. And
I ding it down just for the music and sound effects and just the ending. Not necessarily the satisfactory, but the ending sequence.
Yeah, it's a choice to go with the whole exorcism thing. I wish that James Wan would have ended it in a way that didn't include an exorcism, but still included a big scare at the end.
Yeah.
And left it open, because, like, clearly that family dealt with that for, like, the better part of a decade.
Yeah.
That's a really scary story just in and of itself. Like, why couldn't you have just expanded upon that? Why did it need to be this big Hollywood moment of an exorcism and the big happy moment at the end? I don't know. Like,
it sells better.
Does it?
I don't know.
No, I don't know that it does. I think people in Hollywood think it does. But real life people often like to see things that are... Sometimes there are things that are scarier than that, like, big
movie Hollywood ending
moment.
I don't know. I guess people also pay. People think that they pay to see this movie and it should have certain things. I think that's what happened to The Nun, too.
Yeah, but you know who proved that? But you know who proved that kind of flipping horror genre all the way over?
Blair Witch?
Not just the Blair Witch. I mean, yes, the Blair Witch, because they really didn't show anything.
Yeah.
That's a movie entirely made of, you know, subtlety, right? And, like, nuance.
Yeah.
But no, like, Hereditary and Midsommar. Yeah. And I would also agree that, like, Get Out is like that, too.
Yeah.
And so is Us. It's really freaky. They don't necessarily have these, like, big... Well, Hereditary has a pretty big disturbing moment at the end.
Yeah.
But it's more, like, disturbing than, like, I don't know, your typical Hollywood horror.
Yeah, it went a different weird route.
Yeah.
But that's kind of like, again, and that's, I feel like, the downfall with Hereditary is that you either love that weirdness or you hated the weirdness.
Yeah, I guess I love that weirdness, so I think, like, you know.
I guess when you're going into the stereotypes of a haunting movie, it needs to be a possession, it needs to be an exorcism.
Yeah.
It's crying overdone.
Yes.
And especially when it is a little over the top. Like, I understand it needs to have a big ending, like, you kind of built up all this momentum for the movie.
Yeah.
It would almost be nice sometimes to, like, you know, things calm down and, like, the movie can still have a resolute ending without having a big scene.
Yeah, without having that type of a big scene.
But that's just our moments on that. But that's basically it. Like, if you're looking for a genuinely more enjoyable than a documentary type of movie, but understanding it is still Hollywood.
Yeah, I think it's really solid.
Great watch.
Yeah.
We definitely recommend that.
And it is scary. Like, we've seen it 1,000 times. So no, I don't get scared now. But, like, the first time.
Well, especially when you start watching it and you're like, This was someone's life.
Yeah, this is freaky. This is scary.
As much as it is blown up for Hollywood, like, to an extent...
That was someone's life?
This was someone's life.
Yeah.
And that's enough. I'm good. We can leave it in a film.
Yep.
Doesn't have to happen to me.
So for our next episode, we're going to be continuing the Conjuring universe. And we're going to be looking at the second movie in order of release date, not in the...
Chronological order.
...universe. And that is Annabelle. Thanks so much for joining us once again on
Dark Room Reviews.